Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Brother Imam Alfred, and we're speaking with a brother who has retired from street life, by no means a square. And he is Brother Arthur Thomas of Oklahoma. Welcome to Religion Means Alive.
Thank you, sir, for having me.
Yes, sir. Would you please give us an opening statement? Just tell us what you have been a part of and what you're in. Maybe you're still in reserves. I mean, you respect your roots. You haven't thrown your roots away. You won't throw away any part of your life that you've grown up with. I don't throw a pass. I was part of the Baptist life. I was part of the street life. I was part of the nativism. All that is a part of me. And some of the young people said, "You're an old OG." I said, "Well, who told you I turned in my papers?" So, you know, sometimes the life of being a gangster, you just can't throw all of it away. But tell us, Brother Arthur, in your own words, well, just tell us what you'd like to tell our audience for an opening statement.
Yes, sir. Right now I'm 41 years old. I've been at the penitentiary now for almost 3 years. It'll be 3 years come January 13th. I'll be released from the pen for drug trafficking, in which I served 6 years on a 25-year sentence. But that was part of my whole life, like I said.
Was that a federal charge or a state charge?
You said what, sir?
Was it a federal charge or a state charge?
It was a state charge. I did state time in the Department of Corrections in Oklahoma.
Yes, sir. Continue.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, but before then, I started gangbanging at 12 years old, you know what I mean, which led me to do a lot of different things, but I didn't go to the penitentiary until I was 33 years old. So, but I gangbanged in between then full time, so I was an active member. But after I went to the penitentiary, I've seen a better and better light, and I come out and I've reformed my ways, and I'm currently working, and finna go to school come August 19th, finna go to school for Heaton in there, down here in Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Trade School, and hopefully get on my feet and turn things around.
I'm sorry. What organizations, if you feel free to tell us the organization, I'm sure you're in good standing with them, and have left with no hard feelings. They understand. What's the name of your organization, may I ask, that you're a part of?
I'm affiliated with the Grape Street Crips.
The Grape Street Crips. Okay.
Yes,
all right. Well, welcome, Grape Street Crips. I hope all our Crip brothers are listening. And if you would let them know on social media that you were on the program and let everybody know, because this is a beneficial life. What fascinated you? I understand you grew up as a Muslim. What fascinated you about street life and gangbanging?
Just the entertainment of it, the fast life. I mean, you see. You see different people. You see different people as I was growing up, as you would call the OGs back then. You see them doing things, you know what I mean, with the big cars and the fancy rims and the clothes and the pockets full of money and items like that. So, I mean, once I seen that, I didn't really know about the fighting part or the shooting part of it till later on. But once I seen that, then I started wanting money. And then once I got involved and started trying to get that money, then you start, you know what I mean, shooting at different people and you start getting fights and you start getting different reps and everything else getting involved. But just the limelight of seeing all the money, you know what I mean, and the cars and the clothes and the changing of clothes and stuff like that, it lured me into it.
You know, when I was growing up, it was the appeal of street life, pimping. Iceberg Slim's book was out, and it was just a very, very fascinating life for a lot of us. You know, the fast lane, as we called it. Now, were you a Muslim at this time?
I was just a practicing Muslim in a household where Muslim was the main religion, yes, sir.
But the appeal of the street was a bit stronger than the appeal of the masjid. Why was that?
Yes, sir. Because of the stronghold that it has on you. I mean, religion is there, but you can't see it. I mean, you can see the money, you can see the girls, you can see the crack being sold. You can see your homeboys willing to save your life or willing to go to bat for you at any time on the street. So that right there was more real than the Muslim was, I mean, the religion was.
Yeah, so you didn't have – the mosque at this time is nothing – this is not the Nation of Islam. This is just being Muslim. And we didn't have any kind of organization. In other words, in a way, it looked like a square organization, wouldn't it? I mean, there was no real brotherhood there in the mosque. But there was a brotherhood among the Great Street Crips. Y'all looked out for each other.
Exactly.
Okay. But you know, you didn't realize that there were fringe benefits to membership. Membership has its privileges and its pain. So you were making fast money, slinging. I get New York, they call it slinging, and then it started progressing. Tell us about that progression.
You go from, I started out actually breaking in houses. I went from breaking in houses to stealing cars. And once I started stealing cars and breaking in houses, I was doing that as a combination, to get money to sell dope. You know what I mean? So I would do that and go get my dope, and then I would sell dope. And I would start out on the street corner. That's how I did start out. Me and my fellow gang members, my brother, actually, he was like my right-hand man, but me and him started out on the street corner selling dope and going to different projects and taking over different turfs and making our name known, you know, about doing different violent acts or just different gang members, you know. And then you start attributing so much money, you go from street dealer to gassing at the house, making the runs, you know what I mean? So we start buying more and more dope, keys of dope, you know what I mean? And eventually we start going from street dealing to making some serious money.
When you start making this street money, nobody's just going to let you make street money. There's going to be competition. This is business. So you got the Great Street Crips, but there's other Crips and there's the Bloods and there's a whole lot of other groups that want in on your profit. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's why I said we did another violent act, you know what I mean, in order to take over turfs, in order to go.
And that's what I'm saying. You had to protect that. You can't just go out here. Nobody's going to let you just sling dope and make thousands, sometimes millions of dollars, and they not get a part of it.
Exactly.
Yes, this is brother. We are dear people. We'll speak with Brother Arthur Thomas, and Brother Arthur Thomas has been home for 3 years. He's doing remarkably well. But I want the young people. Anybody want to speak with him at 805-727-7013. See, Brother Arthur, if I'm going to go out on the streets and teach al-Islam, I don't want squares with me. I want alpha male men with me. People have shown up. Tell when we talk about in the street life and we say shown up, what does it mean by a shown up person, a person who's thorough? What does that mean?
A person that's, we call them street cred, you know what I mean? So some people, you know what I mean, you hear their names and their names precede them, you know what I mean? You know that so-and-so is real. I know that when he tell me something, I know it can be, you know what I mean, word is bond, is what we like to call it. But, you know what I mean, it goes a long way without saying. Then versus having somebody who ain't never stepped in your shoes or walked a day in my shoes, you know what I mean? Those guys are easier to talk to, easier to bounce stuff off of, and they're easier to read. I mean, in the street, you read people really easy. I mean, being in the street life, you got to be able to read somebody because it may cost you your life. So, I mean, when you read somebody, you see that they're real. I mean, it's just a show of care.
I like that. That's right. If you don't read correctly, it might cost your life. Now, while you were fired up about street life, were you ever, did you ever think about getting out of it at that time, or you were in the throes?
I wasn't really straddling the fence, but, you know, I mean, I had a family, I had kids, and I knew right and wrong, but just the luxury of the items I had, you know, I mean, I had a $180,000 house, I had cars. You know what I mean? My kids didn't want for nothing. My girl, she didn't have to work if she wanted to. But just chasing that money right there is what kept me alive. I mean, once you, it's kind of like it is an addiction. I mean, it's just, having money is an addiction, just like using dope or heroin, anything else. So I just kept chasing it.
It's something you actually get high on. It's a mood change. It gives you a sense of power and empowerment. It actually is an addiction, in effect, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Every bit of it.
Yeah, and when you get a $180,000 house, you want more. You know, you want to go to Vegas. This lifestyle is something our families need to understand. You see, in other words, a lot of people, I see some people, they come on the show, they just dismiss them because they don't want to hear that stuff. But look, this is not some spook show. This is reality. Now, so life is going good. You're in the fast lane. You drive in the big car. You got the deluxe apartment in the sky. Now, and also at the same time, I guess other women are being attracted to you too, right? Not just your girl. Oh, but I mean, So you got fast money, pretty women, and power, street cred. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Every bit of it. Money brings power.
Tell us about the crash. What is the crash of being a gangbanger? I mean, you got the $180,000, you got the house, you're slinging, you're making money, but you're a Muslim. You know that you got a conscience. Tell me what's that like to be a Muslim and a member of the Great Street Crips.
I think you're riding a slow train to hell. You know what I mean? Basically, I mean, I knew eventually I would get caught, and different people would have dreams and tell me, hey, man, I had a dream that you got caught selling dope, and I had a dream that you was in jail. And they would come and tell me, I guess, kind of, you know what I mean, trying to be psychic to me or trying to just, hey, put my coattail or whatever. But I was already, you know what I mean, I was already too high. My head was too high in the clouds, and I was too far gone, so I wouldn't listen to them. And, you know what I mean, my sister would come and tell me, and she would come to me in tears and tell me, hey, you need to stop this and stop that. But like I said, I was too far gone. And then, as you know what I mean, as I get caught up in the life, people around me get caught up, and they don't let me down to get caught up, and things start to happen. So the feds start coming wise to our game, even though I didn't get federal charges, the feds start coming aware to our game and getting the state involved, and I get busted. And, you know what I mean, most of my homeboys that I gangbanged with had already been in the penitentiary. A couple of them were still getting out, but I was like the last of the Mohicans to get caught. Me and a couple of my other homeboys. So when they called me,
so you must have felt kind of invincible. Nothing in the world nobody could tell you. You out on the streets, you got all the pyramids of the streets, you got the money, you got the women, you got the beautiful home. I know you must have had a fine car, all the clothes you want, you could buy things for people. So, and you hadn't been busted at that point. So what the hell could anybody tell you? I'm asking you that question because what should a parent, what should a friend tell somebody they know that's banging hard? Is there anything they can tell them?
Yeah, it's scary because when you talk to somebody like that, they really can't hear you. You know what I mean? So it almost takes like an act of God, you know what I mean, as they say. But before that act of God, you got to sit down and tell them, man, where are you going? There's an end to it, man. There's an end to it. You can't see yourself in 5 years, 10 years, nowhere saying I'm going to be a $1 million dope dealer. You know what I mean? Because I promise you, that's what I thought I was going to be, me and my little brothers and all my other homeboys. We thought we were going to be millionaire dollar dope dealers, you know what I mean? In which there is some that exists, but I don't know none. So that's what I'm telling them. Hey, man, whatever you're doing, you got to put a stop to it because it's an end. You know what I mean? Now, you can get a 10-year career. You can get a 15-year career. You can have a job 20 years, but it won't be selling dope, and it won't be running the streets.
Now, let me ask you this. I'm sure you probably have heard of the magazine, Feds Magazine. Where do most of the people end up at that's in the featured ones, the big kingpins? Where do they generally end up at?
A lot of them end up with life without parole.
Yes, sir.
Are in the ground dead. You know what I mean? Most of your cartel members always have somebody jockeying for their position. So it's always, you know what I mean, if I can get him off, I can be the next man. So either or. Either you're in a penitentiary with life or you're dead without life.
Well, let me ask you, and what about the brothers who are wounded in the process? I mean, you know, people are going to shoot you again. Like I said, this is not some territory that you're just going to give up. See, I think some of you know who out here listening to broadcast. I see a couple of people, they dotted off the air as soon as I start talking with you. But, you know, to hell with those kind of people, because guess what? They got children right in their houses pulling all kinds of stuff, and they don't even know the sign because they don't have enough sense to listen to Brother Arthur. Brother Arthur's here telling us real. He's keeping it real. I mean, and you are a brother that is sharing your life with us. I want you to share with us further how your life crashed.
On May 12th in 2004, I had a house out south, which is South Tulsa, and my mom stayed in North Tulsa. On May 12th of 2004, my house in North Tulsa, which was my mom's, got raided by the police, and they found 12 ounces of crack. You know what I mean? But like I said, my address is only for 81st and Yale, so they come and survey, search for them, come back and got me and took me to jail. I fought that case for a year and a half with three different lawyers, paid attorneys and everything else, and still ended up getting 25 years drug trafficking and a $100,000 fine. So they basically ended up tying my money up with my house out south and my cars and everything and took everything I had and sent me to the penitentiary. And I did 6 years on a 25-year sentence. And like I said, I'm just now getting out. I've almost been out 3 years. But I don't have nothing that I had when I was in 2004, nothing. I had to come back, and I got a 2005 Ford Focus now that I'm driving, luckily. But I'm staying with my mom and the girl that I had when at that time. She's married and moved on. And I'm just not trying to get on my feet. I'm trying to get on my feet.
But let me, and I also heard you go to school, but before I get to the education, what life has been like, I want you to also share with us how blessed you are not to end up in the federal penitentiary. Because, I mean, really, a lot of charges, when you're dealing with weight, people can end up easily in the federal penitentiary for life with the release date of death. So I guess you know quite a few people who have ended up with federal sentences of life imprisonment.
Oh, I've known quite a few people with life in feds, but I know more people with life in the state that will never get out behind some drugs. I mean, got 25-year sentences, got 300-year sentences, got sentences that only require life. But if you can't do them in a lifetime, and they got all behind some drugs, all behind some
300
drugs.
Years. So
300 years.
Yeah. Man, look, life without parole, 300 years, 25 years. Now, okay, so did you get out on bail while you were waiting sentencing? Or, I mean, you spent a lot of money on lawyers.
I got out on a $100,000 bond, which I had to put one of my houses up. And I paid three different lawyers. I paid one lawyer $1,500, another lawyer $2,500, and the final lawyer $5,000. And I also paid a lawyer $3,000 in the penitentiary to try to get me an appeal. None of that worked. I got out on parole in January 13th of 2010.
Now, what was life like for you as a gangbanger inside the correctional facility?
It's different. It's different. It's more, believe it or not, I think it's more liver out here on the streets than it is in the penitentiary. But it's different. I mean, of course, you got to go rep. You got to go rep your set, and you got to go click up is what they call it. And with Grave Street not being a real nationally known gang, it's only a few of us anyway. And the fewer of us it is, the better, because most of us are serious enough to handle our business. So, I mean, you go there and you click up and you do your time. I mean, you try to stay out the way, you make the right calls. But prison is a whole other world. It's a whole other world. So sometimes you got to get involved.
What do you mean by it being a whole other world? Is it a good place for a young man, 18, 19 years old, to go? I mean, he's clicked up. He has to make the right calls, because then you'd say if you make the wrong calls, you won't be around. And certainly there's a code of jailing, as some people put it. So let me ask you this. A guy goes in. Is is there like is in New York and East Coast they have these, they even have the blood Muslims. Do they have like that, the Crips Muslims or the blood Muslims?
Yeah, but it's not that serious of a set where they segregate it like that. I mean, you might have some Crips that are also Muslims or some blood that are also Muslims, but they still gonna hang in their blood set. They still gonna hang in their Crips set. You know what I mean? And I mean, it's Muslims that hang out, and of course, in the penitentiary. And if something happens to those Muslim brothers in that, but that Crip Muslim or that blood Muslim, they gonna take off from their set and go help those Muslims. You know what I mean? But everybody pretty much stay in their own set, and so they're easily influential.
Oh, I got you. So you can't be a part of two sets.
No, you can't straddle the fence. You're gonna live or die one set, because those guys gonna live or die with you.
Right. Okay. So really, who's running things in the prison now?
It's the inmates, and always gonna be the inmates.
Yes, sir. Now, so it used to, like, here on the East Coast, it's the Muslim, the Latin Kings, and the Latin Kings, and then it's the what the white boys call the Aryan Nation. Is it like what is it like in the
Aryan brothers over here?
Huh?
I said, yeah, they call them Aryan brothers out here.
Aryan brothers, the same thing. Yeah, they strong. Do you have the Latin brothers, the Latin Kings?
They don't have the Latin Kings, but they have like the Serranos and the other Mexican groups like that. They got Mexican gangs, but they're not Latin Kings per se.
And the American Indians, do they have their own gangs?
Yes, sir. You better believe it. The IBHs, Indian Brotherhood.
And that's a rough brotherhood. You said the way you said it, you better believe it. So they were nobody to play with. Nobody's playing.
Nobody's playing. Nobody's playing.
So this is not a life of ideal, just going out selling drugs. That eventually there's going to be some bills going to have to be paid, right?
Yes, sir.
You have to pay the piper.
Yes, sir. I've seen people come in the penitentiary 18 and 19 years old that really wasn't knowing what gangbanging was, and got killed, and they was martyrs, you know what I mean? And they didn't know what they was getting involved in, but I sat back and watched it. Hey, man, this is serious stuff, but if you don't know, you don't know.
So, but the lack of knowledge can cause death, sudden death. Is that right?
For sure.
So young people that are listening, and I hope all the parents will play this for their children. See, this is not something you see in Feds magazine, where everything is glamorized, people look like big time heroes, but there's a crash. And Brother Arthur's telling us also about the chemical addiction of getting money. So it's like you're not satisfied to have a $180,000 home, you're gonna move on. Then you're going to move into another territory. After a while, you're going to try to pop and go somewhere else. And you're going to try to grow and grow. There's no end until you crash. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And then when you are in prison, you have to go along. You get to click up. The individuals, basically, individuals in prison don't survive. Isn't that right?
Man, for real.
They become victims. They become prey.
Yeah. Victims are they become what you call state property, you know what I mean, institutionalized. They become monsters, you know what I mean? They become products of their environment. Some of them able to snap back, some of them are not able to snap back. Like I said, I was able to go in there and be the monster and also be, I guess, a humble monster, because sometimes I had to play the role also, but at the same time, I was able to get out and still have my same mentality and be street smart enough to know I got to do things different.
Yes, so the monsters, and then some people just become informants, right? I mean, they just go into protective custody. Of course, I worked in corrections, and the inmates, the officers, nobody trusts people in protective custody, isn't that right?
That's right. That's right.
They're considered snitches by them, and any time the inmates get an opportunity, and that happens, they would jam you up. So, I mean, what we're saying here to young people that be listening, and I hope older people will play this interview of Brother Arthur that is a retired gangbanger. Have you retired from the business, Brother Arthur?
I retired from the business of gangbanging, which involves shooting and fighting and all that stuff. But I'm still a member of Grape Street Crips. I'm just not actually gangbanging.
Yes, sir. So you're in now for the social improvement of the brotherhood. And I guess there are a lot. Are there other brothers like you who have reformed and they still in the association? They look out for each other, but they're not going to gangbang anymore.
Yes, sir. It's almost like a motorcycle club now for some of the guys that I hang around. And I see other guys that's on that's Bloods and that's Neighborhoods and that's Hoovers. They're doing the same thing. You know what I mean? We're up in age now, and we still, you know what I mean, we like to hold our stuff prideful and say, yeah, we members, but we don't do all that silly bull job we did when we was young.
Yes, sir. May I ask, how old are you now?
I'm 41.
And you spent 6 years in the penitentiary. And about how many years of your life did you spend in the and gang life?
I would say I did 10 active years where I was every day slanging and banging, shooting, or doing something stupid, or doing something that involved representing my purple rag. You know, I did 10 active years. That'd be like an army member going to the army for 10
yes, sir.
Years or serving like that. Yes, sir.
Did you travel outside of Oklahoma or just stay in Oklahoma?
Oklahoma only.
Okay. Well, that was a blessing. Good you didn't cross state lines. We may not be having this conversation. See, you know, what I'm trying to present to the public, that first there can be life after gangbanging. But the first thing I would say, and maybe you give advice, what would you say to a young man who is considered gangbanging?
I would tell him that it's other things to grab onto. I know that, you know, I mean, gang life looks so sweet. It looks so lucrative, or however word you want to associate with it, but it's not the right step to make, man. I mean, you can grab on to many other validated associated things like basketball or football or a church event. Or if you don't like church, you can go somewhere else. I mean, there's so many other things to do, because once you grab this life, man, it's a lifetime deal that you can't come back from. Some people come back from, and some people don't come back from. I mean, everybody's road is chosen differently, but I would try to choose a better road off the top. That way your life will start better off the top, because once you go down this road, it's so hard to get out of, man. You make so many different enemies, who you thought were your friends and foes and police, and it's a hectic life. It's not a life for the, you know what I mean, that you think it is. It looks good on TV. It looks good on the videos. But when you're really involved in it, you're like, man, this is not the life for me.
Yes, so it's not the ideal life. I mean, there's no retirement. Someone has asked me, what was the appeal? He kind of answered. You know, no, but a Muslim lady asked, what was the appeal of gangbanging when you were already in a brotherhood?
No, it comes more with it, though. It's like if you ever get into your first fight or around your homies, or you ever, you know what I mean, go around and hang out with your first group before the girls are around your homies, it's just sit around doing it. And then you sit around and you watch the videos, you see the Rick Rosses, and you see the Drakes and the Lil Wayne's with all the cars and other stuff, and then you go back and you do a little hustling on the streets, and then y'all save y'all money up, and y'all able to go buy your first car, your first rim, and it just gets so great. You're like, man, I did all this in like a week, a month, or 2 weeks. It takes no time to do it. It takes no time to make money selling dope, because you have to, that's what you contribute all your time to. You know what I mean? So, like I said, when money comes power, and once you get that money, it's a wrap.
And, of course, in that period, you were able to think about taking care of your children and all this kind of thing. I'm going to open the phone line. We're speaking with Brother Arthur. Brother Arthur is a brother that has now made a progression in his life. He did 10 years of active duty in the gang army. He is now out of it. He's retired from it. Pardon me? Yeah. So if you all would like to ask him any questions, just dial 805 727-7013. He's the real deal. He's not some fake. This is not something you see on TV. You're speaking with a real, live, flesh and blood person. Now, since you've been out of the penitentiary, let me ask you this. While you were in the penitentiary, did you start thinking about making changes?
Oh, yeah. Eventually, after about a year and a half in the pen, like I said, the light come on, and I said, yeah, I better do something and try to get myself right. So I started taking programs that I thought would, you know what I mean, help me get out, you know, once I got out, to get a job and maintain, to be a productive member of society once I got out and stuff, you know what I mean? And started taking, like, anger management courses, Planned Parenthood courses to help me be a father. Just reading books and strategic kind of stuff to open my mind up to different stuff that I wasn't aware of before I went to the pen. So, you know, I try to get my mind right and take that demonic mean, that monster out of me, you know what I mean, that money-making machine or that dude that run up in your face and his grapes you crib or something, you know what I mean, they'll start fighting or whatever, however it may be, take that monster out and that mentality out. I try to change by reading books and change my mind, change my mentality.
Did you have a high school diploma when you went into the pen?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are you able now still in Oklahoma to take college courses?
Yes, sir. Like I said, I'm about to start college in August 19th for heating and air.
Okay, but and the joint, were you able to take courses?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now let me ask you this: what advice would you give to a parent or to the Muslim community towards preventing our children from becoming a gangbanger?
The preventive measure would be to watch your kids. I mean, to be involved in your kids' life, to talk to your kids, to have open conversations about what's going on, you know what I mean? That's the preventive measure because if not, I mean, it starts right there with you. So once you lose control right there and you let them off that curb and they see Junebug or Nitro or T-Money or them down the street having fun and they start asking them questions, and they still giving them the wrong answers, but they're giving them answers anyway, then you lost the fight. It's the preventive measure that you could have had it gone. So I'm going to try to get them in the house first.
Okay, so get in. Do you have children?
Yes, sir. I got 5 kids.
And what is the oldest?
23, and the youngest is 7.
Has any of them decided to gang the bang?
Yes, sir. My 23-year-old, he had a little dip dab in gangbanging, and he's still trying to find himself because when I left, he was just 15, really getting initiated into gangbanging. He had maybe been there a year because I was having problems before I went to the penitentiary. But then as I left, I guess he got fully acclimated, and he's still in there, but right now he's in the county jail where I can't talk to him. So.
Yeah, so this is generational. If we don't watch, if you don't take your grandsons from him, work with them, they could end up the same way. I guess you've seen 3 and 4 generations in the penitentiary. God told me his great-grandfather was in jail with him, his father was in jail with him, and his grandfather was in jail. They all were in jail together, jailing together, as he put it. So this is a cycle, a very vicious cycle. And what is it, let me ask you this, were you also at the same time practicing Islam while you were gangbanging?
Like I said, in my household it was, but I can't say because I had my foot on another side of the fence that I was actually practicing.
Okay,
know?
Because there are people who I call, they got 2 feet. 1 foot is, you know, you see them at the masjid. And I don't know whether that's true in Oklahoma or not. You see them at the masjid. And also, they also gangbanging. They come to Juma and they're gone.
Yeah. 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 I feel like they're more in the penitentiary than I have in the actual streets. You know what I mean? But behind closed doors, you never know what the next man got going anyway. So I wouldn't say that I
My brother, I like you, Brother Arthur Rick. We got to bring you out of the East Coast, man, to talk to our people. What should we be doing in our communities to relate to people without patronizing them about street life?
Get people around them that's been there. I mean, they got all these prepaid counselors that's been in college 9, 10, 15 years, and they never been in the streets. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And can't tell nobody about nothing about the streets. And like I said, when you read people and you hear that bullshit, you know bullshit when you hear bullshit, so you get away from it. But if you have somebody that sit there and grab your heart and grab your conversation and grab your mind, then okay, I'll listen to you, man. What you got to say, right? Let me listen to what you got to say, bro. And you listen to somebody like that. So it takes somebody to try to get on their level and say, hey, I'm here to help, not here to hurt. You know what I mean? And then also with that, I'm here to help, here to hurt, show me something. Don't just talk about it, be about it. Show me something, man. Show me a different outlet. Everybody got all these preventive measures and thought processes about programs, but don't nobody want to put me in one. You know what I mean? Don't nobody want to give me a chance. So that's what the most teenage or active gang member feel like is that don't nobody want to give me a chance, so I'm going to do this. It's the easier way out. And the gang is the easier way out, so you got to give me an easier way out.
What should we be doing in the community? What should we be giving our young people in the community? You've been a Muslim. You grew up as a Muslim. What do you think is missing in the Muslim community? First, even before preventing gangbanging, but just what when you were a Muslim, what would you like to see besides this Juma prayer, somebody telling you what wrong you are?
I would like to see somebody out there like the Christians do. They get out there and they recruit, you know what I mean? They get out there in their little joy buses and they get out there in little vans and they get out there and they're interactive. They get out there in your face, whether it seems real or congenital to me. So, I mean, I would get out there and do what they do. The Muslim brothers need to get out and mingle more, talk more, and let's get in some people's face and shake some hands and say, hey, man, come over here, let's go do this. Because that's where you're going to find them in the streets. You're not going to find them at the mosque. You're not going to find them at the churches. You're going to find them in the streets. So we got to get out there and we got to go find them. We got to go touch their hands and look in their faces and get them on in.
So that's how the Nation of Islam was. When I was growing up in the Nation of Islam, that's what we did. We had gangbangers. Hey, you know, most of the people that came into Islam came out of the gangs, came out of the pool room, came out of, you know, that's the rhythm of African-American male life. Plus, I think it's also part of African-American male life, wanting to be a part of something. And someone asked me this question. They said, why is there a Muslim brotherhood? Can you answer that? As a young man, did you find a Muslim brotherhood?
Did I find a Muslim brotherhood?
Did you find there to be a brotherhood among the Muslims?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And like I said, had I chose that route, I could have easily been gangbanging for the Muslims just as hard as I gangbanged for the Grey Street Crips. It was there. It's just that the Grey Street Crips was just more lucrative and luxurious looking. I mean, it was there for the taking. And my dad's a full active member of the Muslim community. I mean, he's right there every day. So, I mean, it was there, and I heard it. But it just hearing it and going out the other year with all the stuff I got in front of me.
Right, but also your dad is a for real imam. I mean, he's not a bullshit imam. He's not a person that's above the cloud. He can relate. In fact, you know, if you read books on gangbanging, and people working with gang intervention, to find out that your dad is for real. What do you think about your dad that's different than these other guys who really just fake this shit they talking about? They ain't walking the walk.
Exactly. And that's what I said. My dad, he's one of the only few guys that I know that hadn't been in the gang life, but knows the ins and the outs of gang members' thoughts and our minds and our hearts. And I mean, he dealt with us long enough, you know what I mean, where he know, I mean, his kids, me and my brothers, you know what I mean, and then other members that he's dealt with, other people in the street he's dealt with, he's the real deal. And if we can get him and other cats, like I said, to participate in store programs and pulling people in, then those people should be the front runners when we start turning this thing around.
Yes, sir. And now what are you doing? You said, I think you said in August you will be going to college to study heating and air conditioning engineering?
Yes, sir.
And you plan to get your bachelor's degree and go into that business. That's a much safer business than slinging on the streets.
Yeah, oh, yes, sir. And you know what I mean? I can also work for myself, and that's one of the things that lured me to it. I mean, being in the gang life, we don't have acquire a lot of jobs, and we get kind of egotistical, you know what I mean, along doing our gang life deal. So it's kind of hard to work on a job, but we still can work. So that's what I looked at in the penitentiary. I said, man, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to work for myself. And I've been trying to get in school for the last 3 years I've been out. I just now got accepted, and I'm going to start going. I graduate May 24th. I start August 29th.
Oh, great. But praise be to Almighty God, Allah. Dear beloved people, you can talk with Brother Arthur Thomas, a man who's been a Muslim all his life. And Brother Arthur went into the Crips, Blake Street Crips, and he gangbanged for 10 years. He was an active soldier, not a talker, an action walker in gang life. And he, after his prison sentence of 25 years, he did 6 years. He's out. He has 5 children. He's going to school. You're talking to a real live man, not somebody who's faking it, not somebody who's playing. And, you know, you parents should really want to know what's going on. You should ask questions of Brother Arthur. You know, I saw a brother, he thinks he's so holy, he clicked the broadcast off. He didn't want to hear that. But see, guess what? It's going on with your grandchildren. It's going on with your sons. You may not even know it. What do you tell Brother Arthur your sons now? Do you just tell them to square up? I mean, you got the 23-year-old. Tell us how you, as a father, relate to first your children.
To my 23-year-old, like I said, he's been in jail the last past year, so.
Yes, Brother Arthur? We might have lost a connection to Brother Arthur, but I'm sure he will. Brother Arthur? Brother Arthur is a retired gangbanger. And he's telling us this today is the New Africa show of Religion Means Alive. We've lost a connection, but I'm sure he will be calling back. Now, you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. I'd like to hear from some of you who listened to this conversation. This has been a real conversation. And this show is not a holy roller show. The brother just told we need to get out in the streets, mingle and mix with the people, shake their hand and talk with them. He said the church is making outreach. We're not making any outreach. We're satisfied to stay in the masjid. And we're not satisfied to reach our people, which is no different than us. Somebody came and reached us. Hold just a minute, please. Brother Mujahideen, will you please host the rest of the show while I take this call from Brother Arthur?
Yes, I love him. Okay, yeah. So in listening to what the brother was saying about being in the community, relating to the people, not showing that, you know, you're better than them, just having that human contact. We encourage in everything that, when we think about the human life, we want for our brother what we want for ourselves. We want for our sister what we want for ourselves. We want the best and the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them done unto yourself, as you would have people do unto you. So we can't get past that. Just because we are successful, we might have got a good job, you know, making that big money legally, doesn't mean that we look down on our brother who's struggling to get out of that condition, get out of that culture, as we discussed yesterday, the dominating culture in most of our inner cities is what we think of as a subculture in other cultures and other communities or ethnic groups. So for that reason, it should make us want to do more. We should be more attentive to that need. there are many organizations. Sometimes we might think that there might not be Muslim activities at the masjid to accommodate our young people, you know. But there are other groups, there are other organizations, there are other religious bodies that are also fighting that fight. So we might not be able to have an initiative at our particular center, Islamic center, but we can always join in. And this is encouraging our Quran in the book. It says, bow down with those who bow down. And it also says, join in together with righteous competition towards all that is good.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Is this Brother Arthur?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Brother Arthur, I think he attended to a call. He asked me to carry on a little bit. I did have a question in respect to what you were saying, that once you come to the light of making a determination to get out of that lifestyle, I know you showed us that you're still associated, but you're not, you know, in that same capacity with that group. What are some of the strategies that you have to, I guess, put into play when you decide yourself, an internal decision to make that move?
I had to get a plan, and I had to plan, you know, to stay away from my old play people and my old play toys and my old play things and old play places, all of the old stuff that I was familiar with and people that I was familiar with. If there wasn't going to be on my new beer rides of living, then I was walking away from them. So that's what I did. I mean, I came down. When I got out, I went to some of my old places and looked around some of them old people, and they were doing some of the same things. So I continued and kept on walking. And then I saw some of my old homies that was doing new things, and we're still talking about new things and growing in our kids and jobs and stuff like, you know, I mean, the grown folks talk about. So, you know, I mean, I got on that level now. So I changed everything.
So it didn't take just, you know, a thought or, you know, the knowledge of something. You also have to make steps. You have to make moves. You have to become active in that, in those things.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that's part of my, like I said, my new circle. That's why I said in a minute about changing circle, because with these guys bouncing, I hang around teachers and cats that got careers, you know what I mean, policemen and cats that got careers. So when they bounce their ideas off me, just because I'm a lonely guy that just got the penitentiary, heights me up and lets me know, you know what I mean, oh, I can go do this, I can go do that. Life is not through just because I have it one stop all or whatever, you know.
Yes, sir. So that's good encouraging for someone that, as you're saying, when we have children or teens that are that we're not attending to, and they get into a crowd where they are getting that attention, that's one of the ways that you mentioned that we could bring them back or bring them into the right way of doing things, you know. Because as you mentioned, right, maybe you could share this a little more, that when you had that, it became more than a curiosity, you know, as you said about the seeing the results. But could you say now, looking back, that if maybe the community that you were raised in, if you had more, you know, success and more responsibility and more positive results, that, you know, that life wouldn't even, like, tempted you?
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying about the Muslim Brotherhood becoming active members, just like, you know, I mean, some of the Christian groups do. Just get out in the community and show them different outlets and give them stuff to do and put stuff in where they can say, hey, I accomplished this, I did that, I'm an active member of this community, look at me now, you know what I mean, where they can go back to the cast that maybe have some money and maybe do have a car, and they can say, hey, man, that ain't going to last, but what I'm doing right here is going to last, man. These people going to be here, you know what I mean, 5 years from now, they give me a 5-year plan, they give me assistance to college, they give me things that their drug dealing life ain't going to bring you, bro. So once you have that person in front of you and you see it more than anything else, then you know it's real and you can do it also.
And I think that encouragement and that, you know, that maturity that you're expressing now, I wonder that, well, I believe, I don't know, I can ask you that, if you go back into an environment where, you know, you're sharing that with people who are on that same path to destruction, and they come at you, call you all type of names, you know, saying you this, you that, only because you got caught, you know, what type of things would you say to combat that, you know, those who are in the gang life and saying that, you know, you only saying that because you got caught, you this, you that, and like, what type of words or behavior you would show towards that?
I would tell them, yeah, you're right, bro. You're 100% right. I am talking this jab because I got caught. But I would rather be talking this jab when I got caught than be a dead dude that can't save you. I'll be a dude behind the penitentiary that can't save you. I got caught, and maybe it's the reason why I'm talking to you to turn you around, bro, because I'm telling you, where you going, it's an end to it. You know what I mean? And I promise you, you will be on the flip side. Maybe you can be on the flip side of where you can get your life turned around. But most of them don't make it that way either. So I would tell you, man, to take heed to what I'm saying, man. And know, you know what I mean? As sure as the sun come up in the east and rise in the west, there's a God. He want to see you do better for yourself. And gangbanging life is not the life for you. He didn't choose the life for you.
So that's real talk. It's not like you're in a state of self-denial. You're showing your evolution.
Now, also, brother, I want to ask you a question. If we had an economic program, we had products, legitimate products to put in young and brothers' hands, wouldn't that be an alternative to the gangbanging?
Oh, yeah. Trust me when I say that a brother don't mind hustling for money that's going to be active right then, you know what I mean? Whether it be drug, weed, legitimate book, you can put bottles of water together and sell them. I mean, however it may be, they love to see to go out and see something at the end of the day. You know what I mean? I can do it right now, and at the end of the day, I can get this. Nothing better than it.
That's why we're gonna revive the CPC program. Imam Muhammad told us the way to combat the gangs and activity: give the young men, let them go through the neighborhood selling suits. Man, come back at the end of the day, he put $50 up. He now got $200. And next day, he come back with $200. He come back, he got $800. You know, I've been out on the streets. I've sold merchandise like that. Started with $50. Started with $20. I mean, really what Dre is saying, started from the bottom and now we're here. We have to be real, you know. Isn't that right, my brother? Yeah, you want to talk about somebody going to tell you how to put some money in your pocket. See, one of the attracting powers of the Honorable Muhammad was this. He promised you, if you joined him, you would have money, good homes, friendship in all walks of life, luxury, peace of mind while we live. You know what? If you're a man, you have a glide in your stride if you got money in your pocket. You feel altogether different. I mean, let's not get it wrong. It can get you drunk. It can shock you. That's why you have to bump your head on the floor. If you don't bump, you won't be grounded. Brother Alpha, what else? Let us talk to us. First of all, would you speak to any middle-aged gangbangers who are thinking about getting out of the life? What would you tell them? What steps would that you take if you were thinking about getting out of the life? You haven't been shot. Maybe just come back from the penitentiary. And, you know, it's very tempting when a man gets out to go back to his old buddies and get an assignment or a package or get some work or whatever they're calling it now. What would you say to that, brother?
I would tell them to be careful with the choices they make, and the same choices they make that got them in the pen can keep them out. You know what I mean? I would even advise them to get a five-year plan or a three-year plan. If you don't see yourself in 5 years, see yourself in 3 years. Write it all down. Jot on a sheet of paper. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to get this job. I'm going to get a house. I'm going to get a girlfriend. I'm going to get a car. Jot it all down and see how much of that stuff that you can knock off and say, I actually achieved. Or get baby steps to achieve those steps that you put on that paper. You know what I mean? But you got to start somewhere and you got to have a plan. You can't just come off and say, man, I'm a gangbanger. I'm at the penitentiary. And I'm going to come out here and I'm going to do it Willie Skilly way. No, Willie Skilly way is going to lead you back to the penitentiary, I promise you, because it's so tempting and so luring. The first depression you have by going to get a job and you don't get that job, you're going to say, well, I can go sell dope. Or the first depressed day you have and you say, my car is running hot and I can't make it nowhere, so I'm going to sit at home and I'm going to sell this sack. Then that's what you do. But no, you get your plan and you know it's going to be stuff that's going to throw you off and you keep working that plan, man. And you get people around you that's strong, that's supportive, that's not negative, and that's going to help you try to continue there. But tell them, hey, man, I need help. I need help, and I'm going to try to do this. And if y'all don't help me, I'm going to be doomed. But right now, I need your help, And later on, you know what I mean, we can talk about it later, but right now I need you. And get people like that around you. And those people like that are the ones you're going to count on. And later on you can tell a success story. Hey, man, I remember when I was here, but now I'm there.
Now, what about what advice would you give a young man that's he's not impenitent, but he's out there slinging, he's doing pretty good, but you're getting second thoughts? You know, I was talking to a young man the other day. I said to him, I said, well, now, you just came home. I said, now, let's get a peep of this whole gangbanging thing. The OGs are not going to take the risk for you. You're going to be caught with the package. You're going to jail. So in a way, you're being highly pimped. You know, you're becoming the simp, and they doing the pimping. What do you say to that young guy who is considering getting out of the gang? He hasn't gone to the penitentiary yet. He's getting a little scrambling money. You know, he hasn't made it big. He's working for guys who promising him the moon, who's basically playing him. What would you say to that guy?
Man, be a leader, not a follower. I mean, that's hard to say, being in the gangbanging life, because that's what gangbanging is. You're always following somebody unless you're the man, and it's really hard to be the man in gangbanging life, unless you do a lot of stuff. But he got to wake up and start leading himself. I mean, make your own choices, bro. I mean, bottom line, you live and die by yourself. I mean, you in that box by yourself. When you stand before God, you stand by yourself. So be able to look back and say, man, I made my own choices. I was my own man. You know what I mean? Hey, I like the fact that y'all brought me this far, but I'm going to step back now. I'm going to get out this life, man. You know what I mean? Because I seen so-and-so, or I seen a TV show, or this brother right here talked to me, and he really hit something in my heart close. Or I'm just tired of being y'all's lackey and flunky, and I'm ready to get out. You know what I mean? But
what would happen if you went and told your buddies that you're going to get out? How would they react?
I mean, we had different buddies that did it. I mean, I can remember when some of my buddies come and told me and how mad I was and how I called them punks and all that stuff. And I look back, hindsight is 20/20, of course, and I look back and I regret that. But that's how it was back then. And some of your homeboys are not going to agree with you, but that's your choice, and you got to stand back. You know what I mean? And you're going to get
ragged. You don't face any danger of getting hurt if you decide to back out.
Exactly. Somebody try to even beat you up or hurt you, man. And if that's the case, then you got to do it a more subtle way than how you're trying to go about it. But it's a way to go about it for yourself.
Would you suggest that a guy leave town? Say, for example, you got relatives in New York. You gang banging in Oklahoma. Would you tell the guy to leave Oklahoma? How would you just? I want to get out. I got a package. I want to turn the package back in. I'm going to give the guys money, because it's never good to go and run with nobody's money, because, I mean, people will chase you down. Because I would just give us a step-by-step plan to get
packages.
Out.
It's hard to even take packages back. Once you got a package, it's almost 100% yours, you know what I mean? So it's hard to even take packages back. But at that point in your life, man, I would say pray, bro. I would really say pray. And then stand behind your decision and go do it, because, I mean, it sounds like he's standing behind the eight ball and he's waiting for God to make that decision for him, or waiting for some higher power to make that decision for him, something to intercede and stop his life from going to doom the way it is. And he can't do it. Like, I couldn't do it myself. I wasn't struggling to put myself out of business. I'll be honest with you. Only way I'm going to stop selling drugs is by getting busted by the police. And it sounds like you're saying the only way this brother's going to stop selling drugs is to turn his sack in or to totally walk away. He got to do it, and he got to pray, and he got to be strong in his decision. If it requires him leaving whatever present state you're in, and I know it takes a lot, but you got family, you got support systems, go hide somewhere, man. You got to go rebuild, because what you did and the time you did it in didn't happen overnight, so you can't fix it overnight. You got to, like I said,
right.
You gotta,
I'm glad you're saying that. See, these are real scenarios. I know people like that. In fact, I'm sure that there's several gangbangers listening right now. I talk with them. See, I'm not one of these goody-good-two-shoes imams. I talk to people where they are. I'm like your dad. I talk to all kinds of guys. You know, I used to work at this college where they taught trades. I tell you, man, he said, man, you think this can work for me? I said, if you decide to make it work for you, it can work for you. But let me be honest with you and tell you, this is going to work for you better than being in the penitentiary. Because I know your buddies, they may give you a sack, but, you know, you're going to be responsible for that sack. So my position always, if somebody give you a sack, walk it back. Say, man, I got second thoughts. I don't want it. Take it back. Because somebody give me your own consignment, you don't owe them nothing. I mean, it's that package. Walk it back. Have you ever seen anybody walk the packages back?
No, sir. I've never seen that before.
If a guy wants to get out, he can get out.
Yeah, I've gotten consignment packages, but the thing about it, they be so large in quantity that once you got them, you got them. You know what I mean? So I hadn't been privy to see a person lucky enough to bring one back.
Right. Well, let me ask you, how much addiction takes place among gangbangers? I mean, you're out there on the street, you're slinging, you've got packages, you got a sack. Is it a chance to be your own best customer?
I think the addiction, it comes from all facets of the gangbanger. It comes from, you know what I mean, the getting, because in some form or fashion, you're getting high, you're getting drunk. In some form or fashion, you're having sex with some different types of girls. In some form or fashion, you're going to be driving a different car. You know what I mean? In some form or fashion, you're going to have some nice clothes. In some form or fashion, you're going to take you a little airplane trip, or you're going to go out of town, and you're going to do some different things that you wouldn't normally can do with a working man's check. I mean, all those facets right there, you know what I mean? In some form or fashion, your homeboy going to come up with $10,000 and be like, hey, man, let's go do this. Or, I mean, you see so much money, you see so much stuff that normal people is not doing and that the working man that you do see is doing. You be like, man, this is it. This is what I want to do. This is my life. That's what I said. I mean, people want to see themselves as retired as dope dealers, but man, I'm not lucky enough to see nobody in the town of Tulsa, Oklahoma that I knew that was selling dope when I was a kid, and I started selling dope when I was 12 years old. They're still selling dope right now. All of them cats and dad went to the penitentiary, then got back out, tried it again, went to the penitentiary again, then dad. And everything didn't happen. I mean, it's all kind of factors in selling dope and gangbanging that. It happens. I've seen OGs.
Let me confess to you, I haven't either. I've been on the planet 60 years. I haven't seen a successful one yet. I see guys in wheelchairs. I see guys selling on the street, selling tall tales of what they used to be. They, you know, they got the road. They used to have the road for up front. Now they ain't got bus fare. So that's the life story. I mean, again, I think some of you parents should read Feds magazine. You know. I mean, it has, every month they feature, I think they got another Feds magazine for women. And it tells all the stories of guys with $10, $15 million, guys $25, $30,000, guys $20,000, $30,000. They go out, take a bunch of girlfriends, go to Vegas, party, snort dope, and whatever they do. But, you know, I guess some people say, why are you talking about this during Ramadan? Well, let me just first tell you why. The first 10 days of Ramadan is mercy. The second 10 days of Ramadan is repentance, turning away from our ways that is not pleasing to God and really not pleasing to yourself. Because I know, brother, you must get butterflies in your stomach while you were banging. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
You didn't feel comfortable doing that. I mean, there's a sense of getting there's a high feeling you get out of it. But it's not really a very comfortable, peaceful feeling. Because first of all, you're paranoid. Somebody's always gunning for you. You got to worry about the stick-up crew that's going to come and stick you up. See, this is what you young people who are listening to this show need to know. Those of you who want to consider pimping, the stick-up man is always there. The police is there to arrest you, but also to take your stuff. Isn't that right, brother? You've seen corrupt police officers. I mean, I know you're on parole, so I don't want you to have to go into that. But all of that is a part of street life. Is that right, Brother Arthur?
Yes, sir. I agree 100% with you.
And so and remember another thing. One out of three of your buddies is a snitch. He's an informant. You were probably brought down by an informant, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I got a guy that claimed hunger on me for years, and they don't never tell you who the informant is unless you go to, they say, the court or whatever. So I never found out who he was, but they said he hung around me. And I think he had to hang around me in order to know what was going on because didn't nobody know I had my mom dope at my mom's house.
That's another thing you parents better be on the watch out for, too. You know, people bringing in money into your house, and you don't know where it's coming from. Tell me, I want you to also share with, before we can get back to mom and parents, what should young people be aware of getting in people's cars, riding in cars with people that they may or may not know? I mean, let's just say you know the guy, but the guy's, you know, slinging, he got a nice car, he wants to take you to a movie, he wants to take you to the mall, you know, you went to school with him, he eating, he's going to Applebee's, or sometimes you go to finer restaurants. What should young people be on the alert for? And older people too.
Yeah, know who you're riding with. Everybody's not who they say they are. I mean, not on the on the surface anyway. When the police pull you over and the pipes are from the bus, then you get to see everybody's true face. But before then, everybody's not who they really say they are. I mean, just know that possession is 9/10. And if dude don't want to claim or their female don't want to claim whatever's in that car, and it's only y'all too, then it's yours. And I've seen plenty of my homeboys go to the penitentiary behind somebody else's drugs, somebody else's gun, who they thought, hey, I know this dude's going to claim this, and now dude didn't want to go to the penitentiary, so he said it wasn't his, and now it's up to a court to decide whose gun was it or whose dope was it. And if you're a felon or ain't supposed to be around it, then you're already screwed. But if you're on your first case, then you just got a first case for nothing, so you're still screwed. So know who you're riding with.
You know, you're talking very real. I hope that you will come out with a book, your autobiography, The Ex-Gangbanger. I hope you'll do an autobiography. That's number one. But number two, I'd like to see you do a manual on how to make a comeback. We're going to have a show on that. I want you to invite some of your ex-gangbangers who are turning their lives around, Brother Hopper, to come on the show to show people the step-by-step process. Now, okay, I want to get back to the parent piece. Now, you had a $180,000 crib that it was your mother's house, but you were stashing there.
My house was my house. Yeah, and she stayed in a little old $20,000 house, man.
Wow. But what should a parent be on the lookout for? I mean, you know, the parent is upright, they're decent. The son is handling $10,000, $25,000. He's buying them money, got money. He wants to send them to the Indian reservation to gamble, buying clothes, paying for everything. What should you be on the lookout for?
Exactly. I mean, you know your kids. I mean, you know when your kid is making $30,000 a year versus making $50,000 a month. I mean, you know when you see money, you see odd things. I mean, the people around me, they knew. They said, you know what I mean, the cars I had, having all these new cars, and I invite them out to my house, and they see my house and my new furniture and everything they see. They know that I got some dope, and then when I come out here, they ask me for some money. They might be trying to test me, but I don't know at that point I'm being tested. Hey, Arthur, give me $300. Hey, you want $300? Well, what working man keep $300 in his pocket just loosely like that? A drug dealer, you know what I mean? So they know it's different, right?
I like that. Now, you know what I've heard recently? This is the word on the street, that many guys are slipping out of the dope game and going into the to the pimping game because they said it you know, you don't have to worry about the inventory. Have you heard about that pattern?
No, not in Oklahoma. I mean, if it is, it's something like because my ears is different to the street now about with the things I hear. And it just hadn't got back to me yet. But no, I ain't heard that yet.
Yeah, because that's what I'm saying. Young women should be careful. Because really, I had a niece of mine, great niece, rather, that she was just riding around with the drug. Well, she didn't get no money. She had no money. But she, I tell you what it did, it got her 5 years in jail. Because she was driving around, passing envelopes. She may or may not. Well, she's getting high, too. But she was a facilitator, and she did time in the United States Penitentiary for Women in Kentucky. So you said there, a young lady, she see Mr. Slick, he's riding down the street. He got two apartments, got a beautiful home. I mean, he got a store, got a barbershop that he owns. But there's hardly anybody coming in the barbershop. Or he may have a restaurant. And you see a few people, they even give the bums some food. Get out of here, you know, eat this man.
Right.
What would you say to that young, pretty young lady that see this fast-moving, quick-thinking well-dressed young man walking down the street, giving her rides. What should you be on the alert up for?
Boy, be on alert for your life. Do you know how many young women have been taken in cars and haven't been seen again? It's plenty of them in Oklahoma. I don't know how they do it in New York, but it's plenty of them in Oklahoma that say, have you seen me? And they hadn't been seen. But everything that looked good to you ain't good for you, though, too. So, I would just be curious of my own life. Things look good, and I'm sure that I've got a lot of girls, strange girls, get in my car. So that sister's going to have to be strong within herself to not get in that car and try to walk away. But, just know that your life is on the line, man, and life is so beautiful and so sweet nowadays. I can appreciate life so much that if I could talk to her, maybe she could see the intensity on my face to know, hey, walking up to cars is not the thing to do. You know what I mean? That can cost you. The first time could be the last time. So.
Right, and like I say, I warned women that we want to have an ex gangbanger, woman gangbanger. If you know of one, I'd like to, get in touch with the imam, and we'd like to bring her on the program because this is serious stuff too. Second thing I want to warn women about, and again, this new thing I'm hearing here on the East Coast, is guys say, man, I'm out of the dope game. So you know, you see the guy still riding slick, that he's up to something. And I've met these guys. Look what they're doing. They've got out the dope game. They got the same uniform, same game now. But they're actually kidnapping women, vulnerable women, and saying, look, you mine. Buying them stuff. And all of a sudden, look, you got to pay for this. And you owe your life to me. And out comes the ratchet and all the other stuff comes with it. And the parents are threatened. And, they're not kidnapping. They're slaves to serve in the sex kingdom, guys out of the drug game. Girl, we switched up. This is what we're doing now. We ain't selling drugs no more. See, this is the real stuff. You imams, you leaders, I know you're glued to the rug and the floor. You better be glued to what's going on in the society and come up with strategies. If you were an imam, Brother Arthur, what would you be looking for? How would you help young members in your congregation under 49?
I would go to some of the programs. I don't have any programs initially in my head to think of, but I would go to programs where you involve the community, like whether it be painting houses, picking up trash, clearing out empty houses, boarding up some empty buildings or something, or renovating, some streets or some down the street, organizing some kind of block party, but letting the members of the community help out, going around providing a elderly service that involves the elderly plus the active gang members or the Muslim community also. It's got to be something where it's hands-on and it's active and you can see it, smell it, touch it, and that it's happening and good results are being produced out of it. Because other than that, the streets is always there. They're always calling. They always need some replacement because somebody's always getting killed or took to jail or getting, needing a replacement. So,
now, let me ask you this. Are you, do they have out there, I'm sure they probably do, wounded warriors who have just been shot, they're paralyzed for the rest of their lives, they're riding around in wheelchairs because they've been shot in the game. And again, the game, as you know, is not a luxury game. There's prices to be paid. I've seen people come in from out of town and move in on people's territory. They start seeing people making money. Guy come to Oklahoma, he's coming from California. He said, I'm going to move in on it. He bring his crew in. Look, it's a shootout. Somebody get killed. That's how it's a rough life. So share with us a little bit about the comment on what I was just saying.
Yeah, I don't know as many paraplegics, but I've met some that's been active members. And I even know one guy that was an active member back in the day and got paralyzed. And he's a productive member of society right now. He made his mistake. He got paralyzed. He's in a wheelchair, but he worked for the Department of Human Services down here in Oklahoma. So he's able to come back. But then you got other cats that's in a wheelchair and still call themselves gang banging. Man, are you serious? So sometimes you wake them up and sometimes you don't.
Yes, sir. Well, you all can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. We have the president of the Father, Son, Men's, and Boys Association. I hope he'll press one on the phone and join us in the conversation, because I'm a member of that organization. I want to go on the streets. I want to invite young people. I would like to hear brothers like you to come to New Jersey, to come to New York and talk to young people. I think your calling is in your life now. I think if you write an autobiography, that's where you're going to make your money at now. In addition to your heating business, you need to share your life with people, how they've been reformed. See, now, and you're a very fascinating case for the spooky Muslims, because you grew up as a Muslim, but yet the lure of the streets was so powerful, so inviting, so captivating, that they got you up out of your rug and drag you right to the streets to bang. I hope y'all Muslim wake up and smell the coffee. You know, we got children in our home, but how many more of our children we going to lose? How many more children we going to try to prevent from losing? Again, Brother Hopper just told me you better be frank and have some open conversation with your children. You don't think they holy roller. You don't know what influence the streets have. You know, I got with me that right now, Brother Hopper, a magazine called XX1, I think, what, 21, I believe the magazine is. And I'm reading it. I get Fed's magazine every month. Get Don and Diva every month, because I want to know what's going on in the streets. It doesn't have any appeal to me, but I know I have a 12-year-old and a 16-year-old, and I know it have appeal. My son just came to see a Jay-Z. He was there on his birthday. He was excited. But, I mean, along with the rap music come the rapping of the life. I mean, all of it's tied together to a lifestyle. And I know you've probably been in a life where you all spent $15,000 to go to a concert, to go to a boxing match. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
I mean, take your girl with you. And the other girl understood the deal that you will have more than one. She just had to go with that because the money, the paper was long. But sometimes she didn't get back because somebody shot the cop. Sometimes you got busted. You know, one of the biggest drug dealers in New York, I mean here in Newark, doing life imprisonment, and it has on his release paper death. That's when he'll be released. He was big, $50 million man. And they snatched him up right in Atlantic City at one of the fights. Mink coats was taken. The cars was taken. The car dealership was taken. But I said about his mother, she was a blessed woman. She wouldn't take one dime from him.
Amen.
She's a great woman. She out. Sister was a CO. She didn't take one dime from him. But he's locked up. He wrote a book called The Game Is Dead. That's what he said. He said dead. I mean, and that's
right.
What I say. People should learn. You know, Brother Alpha, you know, I watch this thing closely. And I say, some of our young people are not smart as a carpenter ant. If you knock off a carpenter ant, they break the colony off and go somewhere else. Now, we have seen the biggest boys, the Nicky Barnes, the Frank Lucas, who, by the way, was not but a chump. I get to say this because I'll tell you what happened to him. The Muslims in New York back in 73, who I ran with, we ran them off the streets. The Minister Farrakhan punked out and told us to leave him alone. We told him he had to get the hell out of 110th and 111th Street. And guess what he did, Brother Hopper? With his guns, with his girls, with his cars, he got the hell out of town.
That's right.
Because he knew that we meant business. But what I'm saying is, but all them guys are finished. Nicky Barnes is running for his life. If he ever appeared before a group, he probably would be killed. But the old gangbangers, they all blind, deaf, or dumb. So they ain't going to do nothing to him. So he ain't got to worry about that. One of the guys was in the witness protection program, came right back on 125th Street, walked down the street. You know, because there ain't nothing true about that game. I doubt if you have anybody who later on will do a retaliate. What I'm saying, this is what I wanted to ask you, too. What about the Moors? Do you have the Moors out there in Oklahoma?
Yeah, but I'm not familiar with them.
They're not in the penitentiary out there. Huh? So primarily. Okay. And you say even the Muslims they are set up. So if a guy is a Muslim, he's a blood. He's not gonna stand with the Muslim. He's gonna stand if it's a conflict between a Muslim and a blood. Who would the brother stand with?
Probably the blood. It probably the blood. It depends. You know what I mean? Like I said, you really can't straddle the fence. So if you was hanging out with the Bloods 90% of your time and some of the time between both of those groups, probably the Bloods, no doubt.
Okay. Even though you're Muslim, you pray with the brother, you go to Jummah with him in jail, but you got to be set up. That's a hell of a life, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
What would you say to a young man? He's 12, 14 years old. His friends are now smoking the fillers or whatever they call them, black and mild, filling them up with reefer, woolers. What would you say to that young boy that's fascinating? He's not in the gang yet. He's waiting for his initiation. What would you say to that young boy? He's straddling the fence. He hasn't decided to come into life yet.
I would tell him that, what I tell my kids sometimes too, man, enjoy being a kid while you can be a kid. Because you're only a kid, only a certain fraction of your life, and the rest of the time you're an adult. So while you're a kid, do kid things. I mean, there's grown-up things to do and there's kid things to do. Smoking is a grown-up thing to do. Shooting a gun is a grown-up thing to do. Drinking alcohol is a grown-up thing to do. Do kid things. Enjoy being a kid. Play your games. Play some kind of scholastic sport. You know what I mean? Watch TV. Read a book. Come hang out with your parents, your uncle, your aunt, your brother, your sister. I mean, he's too young right now to think about a legacy, but I would put a legacy on his map. Think about the legacy you're going to leave, son. Think about what they're going to say about you. This man did this. This man did that. Don't let it be this man shot somebody. This man went to penitentiary. This man got life in a pen. This man sold this much dope. But think about, you know what I mean, your family and the legacy you're going to leave after you're gone, when you're dead, gone, and in the grave. You only live once. You don't live two lives. So do all you can do in this life. And it starts right now with you being a kid. You're only going to be a kid once. So let's enjoy this time and help you be a mature man and a good adult.
Now, are you engaged in gang prevention? Are you counseling young gangbangers now?
No, sir. No, sir.
What are you doing? What are you doing for a living at this point? You get out in January of this year, I believe it's January the 6th, 2013.
Yeah, I'm cooking at Big Daddy's right now. I'm cooking at Big Daddy's and I do trees on the side. I do tree work around houses and stuff like that. And then I cook barbecue. You know what I mean? Big Daddy's is a barbecue spot. I'm sorry, I said Big Daddy's like you knew what it was. Big Daddy's is a barbecue spot down here, a local mom and pop little store. You know, and they got three different chains, franchises down here. And I'm a cook for them.
And that's a big difference, but it's an humbling experience. What do your old buddies say and your old customers say when they see you at Big Daddy? And you were Big Daddy one. Yes.
They
don't know what your name was, but they say, that's Big Daddy, working at Big Daddy's, cooking at Big Daddy, earning, you know.
They laugh, but most of them know, you know what I mean, with the things that's going on in Oklahoma, you know what I mean, and the time that people's getting in Oklahoma, that, you know what I mean, they know that I needed to change my life, and you know what I mean, they laugh to say that I couldn't believe to see that you were working now, and to see that you're in that kind of setting now, but it's good to see you. I'd rather see you there than see you in a penitentiary, and I let them know, hey, this is a lifetime deal now, bro, and that's what I tell them about my legacy. I got to leave some kind of legacy. Now, man, I don't want to be known as a dope dealer, you know what I mean, dude, I was known. I want to be known as an entrepreneur that had this many kids, that left the community with something besides dope dealing and gangbanging. That ain't the legacy I want to leave.
What can we as Muslims and concerned African-American people, what can we do to prevent the increase in gangbanging? And to increase the love and create a brotherhood among African-American young men.
Man, be involved. Be involved. Stay involved. Talk. And be real. I mean, if you're going to be in there, be real. Don't half-step because we can see you coming. believe it or not. I mean, we're gonna shoot the shit with you and look at you and play you off or whatever. But as soon as you leave, I fight, be like, man, that was a sorry ass dude. You know what I mean? I don't know why he come over with that crew.
You know what? I'm glad you for real. Because, you know, I worked at three colleges where brothers have been coming out of the joint, man. And, you know, I never got the reputation of being a sorry-ass dude. Because they know I was for real. I didn't play the holy role with them. I'm a real person. You know, I know reality of the streets. I'm glad I had, you know, I was never a gangbanger, really. I mean, I hung around them. I mean, I was around them. I was always fascinated by it. I don't want to talk about the aspects of street life that I was fascinated by. I don't want to glorify it. But I was fascinated by street life. I think most African American men, you see it. It looks good, but it's fake jewelry. It's not really gold. I mean, it's just fake. Because again, the end result, you play the tape to the end. It always the penitentiary, and the funeral home, and in New York, New Jersey, there's a lot of wheelchair victims. Guys rolling in wheelchair, like you said, the guy's still banging in the wheelchair. You know. What can he do? He got a pistol in his hand, got his knocked the wheelchair over, he's gone. Blow the car, and he shoot himself. I've seen that happen. Yeah. So what do you think about devising economic programs for our young men to participate in?
That's a great possibility and really a great sidetrack. Selling dope or selling weed or to the fast hustle, because if you don't show me that I can make some money or give me an alternative to making money, then I'm going to go out and make it myself. So you know what I mean? It's better to, like I said, have a program there to show you, hey, man, you can make this amount of money in this minimum of days if you put in the work to do it, just like you would do hustling. You would do that same thing on that corner, you know what I mean? So come on and do it right now legally, and you can have the same outcome, bro. You know what I mean? But you got to put it there to show them, and then once you show it, they eat it up, man. Everybody likes making money right there where you can actually put in the work and get the money yourself. I mean, gangbangers take pride in their work too, just like any other man.
Yes, sir. And you know what? And you guys work when you gangbang, you work very hard. I mean, you party hard, but people don't realize it's work, it's risk. I mean, there's a lot of things go on in the business side of this. I want you to. Also be aware that we have a brother that I hope he'll come on the line. He has been distributing a product, washing clothing detergent, better than Tide, 10 times stronger, and we hope that it'll hit the market. So there'll be some money that you all, and hopefully we'll develop a whole, this is manufactured by a Muslim brother. If one of the brothers who is involved with that would press one on the line, share with us about that. Because what I believe is the way the Muslim community is going to grow, the alternative to sincere gangbangers is to show them how to make legitimate halal money. Would you agree with that, Brother Arthur?
Yes, sir, exactly. That's my point earlier on saying that if you give them an avenue and show them, hey, I'm going to walk you through it from step one to step, how many every step is going to be. Let's say step 10. I'm going to show you these 10-step program in order to put some money in your pocket. But if you follow all 10 steps and you follow the way I set it down, you will be productive. And you put those 10 steps down and you show them, I mean, we show them the guide, a manual, whatever you got to show them, or just maybe hands-on, because some cats can't read or whatever. Show them hands-on, but put it out there for them to make the money. Oh, yeah, and they succeed. They succeed.
Yes. You can join it. We have about 2 minutes left with Brother Arthur. It's been a fascinating ride with him. He's sharing with us. He's out, 3 years out, productive life. You can dial 805-727-7013. Press 1 on your phone, and you will be connected. And I hope you will tour this country and talk to our young people. Prevent our young people. I hope you'll work with us, and we're going to devise an economic program to come up with to put money in people's pockets. That's the way to fight the drug dealing in the community. Show our men how to be men, how to work on teams. You already know how to work on teams. You know how to get a crew. You've gotten crews. It requires corporations, it requires putting your ego down. Of course, there's going to be one big man. But you can stay out here on the streets and be constructive and be with your family. Brother Mujahideen, do you have any questions for Brother Arthur?
I just appreciate his contributions to tonight's program, and keep up the good work. And as Brother Arthur said, I hope you can join up and get out here together, you know, because somebody like myself, I haven't been in that, you know, in that lifestyle. And we've been blessed to be protected, you know, from that sense. But we don't think we're better than anyone. But it's good to have someone who's a witness to the lifestyle and made their own mind up to progress through it and become their own person, as you were saying earlier. So I just commend you, and hope to meet you one day and work with you and so forth and so on.
I appreciate it, brother.
That's what I'm about to say, Brother Harper. I really have enjoyed it. You've been always live. We're going to invite you back, and maybe you'll pull a panel together. Friends of yours who transforming our lives. I want to congratulate you to be among the living. You know, a lot of people can be great inside the walls. I've seen great Muslims inside the walls. Only to get out 3 hours, they got a 40 in their hand, the kufi off their head. I saw one guy coming out. He's coming into the bus station. I said, man, take your kufi off. You got a 40 in your hand. So I saw him like, yeah, I just want to try it one time. I said, well, you know what happened? You try it one time. You know, you're on your way back on the race because next thing, uptown, and it just goes on and on. And it's ugly to see how people fall into these traps because this is what they are. They're traps. Like I said, we've never seen a successful drug dealer. Everyone I know is dead, locked up, or in a wheelchair. Now, Brother Arthur did bring me an exception to the wheelchair. He said there's some guys still gangbanging in the wheelchair. And I told him I met some, too. That's why all somebody do is push the wheelchair over, take the dope from him, and the gun would go one way and the brother would go the other way, probably shoot himself. So that's not a way to go. Brother Arthur, give us a closing statement as you close out the day on Religion Means a Lot.
Okay. I want to say thank you, man, for the time, and let me express myself. And hopefully, man, if I touch one person, man, that I did what I was supposed to do. I'm not saying I'm perfect by any means of the court, but I'm saying that I'm a work in progress, and that it's got to be a work in progress. You got to start somewhere, man. For that person that thinks you're just in dire straits, there's nowhere to turn, I can't get out, as a step one, man. And all you got to do is get on that step one, get you a plan, and go from there. I mean, keep God in your life. Stay strong in your decisions because your choices are your life, you know what I mean? And work your plan. Work your plan.
Thank you, my dear Brother Harper. Thank you, my dear audience. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means a Lot. Ramadan Mubarak to our Muslims and to other blessed fasting translated. And we are looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. We will have the Sabree brothers who have produced a play. They'll be on the program of Religion Means a Lot. Brother Harper, you have my private number. Call me anytime, and let's set up some programs. Let me ask you, do you have any musical talents as well?
No, sir, I don't. I mean, I sing in the shower and I rap in the shower, but as far as just organized, I don't.
Yes, sir. Well, you certainly have given us a good rap and laid out a beautiful map, and I guarantee you we won't take a nap. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You have listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred. See you tomorrow again on Religion Means Alive.